tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 11th of May 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we had quite a momentous election last week. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it because we have Mark Collette on this evening with the Patriotic Alternative Insight podcast, taking an in-depth look at the results of the election. But I will summarise them here. The Reform Party did massively well in England. I think they got about double the amount that the Labour Party got. And these were local elections in England, so it was for councils. It's not going to make any difference in England to the members of parliament. These were local elections, but both Labour and Conservatives got a massive trouncing by Reform, which is good news. Reform are, of course, a civic nationalist party. We do have what appears to be an ethno-nationalist party, which is Restore. I say they are an ethno-nationalist party because they have pointed out that just because you have a British passport does not actually make you British, and other comments about ethnicity. And because they only registered as a political party a few weeks back, they said that they were only going to contest the council wards in Great Yarmouth, which is where their MP, Rupert Lowe, he's the Member of Parliament for Great Yarmouth. So they basically contested 10 seats, I believe, in Great Yarmouth. And they won every single seat, which is excellent news. So good news that Reform totally smashed the English elections, and good news that Restore showed that they can win every seat in Great Yarmouth. And they wish to roll out the same techniques that they used in Great Yarmouth to the rest of the country, which in, I believe it's going to be 2009, something like that, the next general election, or it could be earlier. So that's what happened in England. In Wales, they're making a huge thing about the Labour Party losing in Wales. And I think ever since they had a devolved parliament in Wales, the Labour Party have ended up with the highest amount of seats. The Labour Party have always had a majority. Now, there's also another party called Plaid Cymru, and they make a big thing about speaking Welsh. And Plaid Cymru started off as a nationalist party in the 40s or the 50s. And they were responsible for forcing the UK government to have Welsh language on the road signs. So in South Wales, on the road signs, you have the English name of the part that you're in, and then you have the Welsh name afterwards. And they were instrumental in getting Welsh taught in schools, which is excellent. Very, very good. But because of this, the Welsh, who I love very much and are a very patriotic and very nationalist type people, they naturally want to vote in a nationalist way. So they vote for Plaid because they know that Plaid Cymru saved the Welsh language effectively and is why they still speak Welsh in Wales. But unless they are actually following politics and they follow what's going on, they're probably going to be unaware that Plaid Cymru are possibly even more pro-immigrant than Labour are. And this is the problem. So they managed to get Labour out as a left-wing party, but there's still another left-wing party in power. It's just that you now have a left-wing party that promotes the Welsh language. And what's more important, actually having Welsh people or having people that speak the Welsh language? Well, I would say it's actually having Welsh people. And I think a lot of the Welsh probably look at London and say, well, that could never happen here. But Cardiff is already only 75% white British, and it's 25% non-white. I mean, it's happening fast, but the majority of Wales is still white. I think it's about 95% white, something like that. So I think the Welsh are showing their nationalism by voting for Plaid Cymru. But at the same time, they're showing their naivety and thinking that just because this party preserves the Welsh language, that they will also want to preserve the Welsh people. I don't think that's the case. In Scotland, the Scottish National Party won again. The Scottish National Party always win in Scotland. And again, it's because the Scots are a nationalist type of people as well. And they will vote for what they believe to be a nationalist party. And the Scottish National Party even call themselves the Scottish Nationalist Party. Only they're internationalist. And they are completely left-wing. They're probably more left-wing than the Labour Party are, even. So, unfortunately, the Scottish National Party won in Scotland. But, and this is quite a good but, Reform came in second place. And Reform also came in second place in Wales. So it means that in these devolved parliaments, which we have in Wales and in Scotland, it means that the opposition, the group that will be putting questions to these left-wing parties, isn't going to be the Conservatives. It's going to be Reform, which is good news that Reform are runners-up in these places. So that's my summary of the election. All in all, I think it was actually pretty positive to see Reform winning so well and so much, and to see Restore winning in their local area as well. There has also been some wins for the Green Party, which were predicted to actually win a bit more than they did. But the fact that they did win, and if you have a look at their councillors, I mean, it's quite incredible. This first news story that I've got here comes from GB News. Queer Tamil immigrant elected as Scottish Green MSP to pocket £77,000 a year, despite not having the right to work. And what they haven't actually said there is that he's an illegal immigrant. People without that don't even have a right to stay in the country can vote in the Scottish elections. I mean, that just shows you how left-wing the Scottish National Party are, that they will allow illegal immigrants not just to vote, but to even stand for Parliament in Scotland. A self-described queer Tamil immigrant who has been elected as a Scottish Green MSP will earn £77,000 a year, despite not having the right to undertake full-time work in the UK. Non-binary PhD student Q Manivannan was allowed to stand after the Scottish Government relaxed legislation to allow non-UK citizens to represent Britons. So you don't have to be Scottish, don't have to be British. You could be from anywhere in the world and just happen to be in the country at the time if you want to stand in the Scottish Parliament. The candidate won the Edinburgh and Lothian's East Holyrood seat on Friday, along with fellow Scottish Greens candidate Iris Duane in Glasgow. And I think Iris Duane is also a transgender. Addressing supporters after winning the seat, the student said, "My name is Dr. Q Manivannan. I am a transgender Tamil immigrant. My pronouns are they, them. I am to some in this country everything that the hateful despise, and I am standing here as your MSP now with care. They say politics is the art of the possible. A politics of care, I would say, expands what is possible for everyone left behind, pushed out, or never invited in." And the fact that he's a PhD student shows that he must be fairly intelligent. So it's not like they've elected somebody of a very low IQ, although his IQ probably still won't be that high because he's an Indian. But he's a PhD student, so therefore he's fairly intelligent. "A Scottish Greens candidate added, every barrier placed before me with the Greens was the reason also that we pushed further." And I guess that's probably a mistranslation. Maybe he's saying that he managed to break through these barriers with the help of the Greens. He then said, "This is what diversity looks like in power." And yes, that is diversity, isn't it? It means no white people, effectively. The less white people there are, the more diversity that there is. And he doesn't actually look that transgender, to be honest. I mean, he looks male in the pictures that are released of him just looks like a Tamil guy with long hair and a suit. Perhaps he dresses differently when he's at home or something. However, after standing on a student visa, the MSP has ramped up efforts to receive donations in a bid to raise £2,089 for a graduate visa. So he's not exactly an illegal immigrant, but he's in the country on a citizen's visa, which means that he doesn't have British citizenship and he doesn't have the right to work either. And yet here he is being voted into a position where he's going to actually have to work. So he's actually breaking the law, I would say. The cash would grant the student 3 years to live and work in the UK before then applying for another visa. So he's a visa overstayer. Sue Webber, Scottish Conservative candidate for the Lothians, said ahead of May the 7th, "Voters will be astonished that this candidate doesn't even know if they will be able to stay in the country going forwards. Questions must be asked as to why they are standing for Holyrood with uncertainty hanging over them." Well, I would say questions really need to be asked of the Scottish National Party for bringing in a law that says that anybody can stand for Parliament, whether they have the right to stay in Britain or not. I think they're the ones that need the questions asking, not really this Tamil guy that put himself up for election. And it also shows that there must be a lot of quote-unquote diversity in the area that he was standing from. I don't think it was lots of white people that voted for him. The PhD student believes the extra time would allow for further leeway to save £5,000 to pay for a global talent visa. The Edinburgh MSP arrived at St Andrews University on a student visa in 2021, meaning that they could only work up to 20 hours a week during term time. There is an opportunity to work in a full-time role outside of the academic calendar. However, working as an MSP requires significantly more than 20 hours per week. I would suggest it's probably more like 20 hours a day, in actual fact. And yet his visa says that he is going to have to be studying at university in that time. The Scottish Greens made historic gains on Friday, winning constituency MSPs in a political first. Maybe 20 hours is a bit extreme. I mean, I was thinking of actual members of Parliament then. Like Prime Ministers supposedly only get 4 or 5 hours sleep a night because of the amount of work that they do. And I guess if you're just he's a member of the Scottish Parliament. Member of the Scottish Parliament, not a council, because this is Scotland. So, yes, he will be doing lots and lots of hours of work, which means that he's breaking his visa conditions. The Scottish Greens made historic gains on Friday, winning constituency MSPs in a political first. SNP bigwig Angus Robertson in Edinburgh Central was given the boot, while Nicola Sturgeon's old Glasgow seat was overturned by the Greens. Again, that's interesting. The Scottish Green Party also secured 13 regional seats, taking its total to 15. And GB News has approached the Scottish Greens for comment. And I'm not too opposed to the Greens, to be honest. They speak up for free speech. They speak up for protests. They don't want to see any clampdowns or any restrictions on protesting. They are anti-Zionist. There are a few policies with the Greens that I agree with. I mean, it might surprise people, but I also think it would be a good idea to legalise all drugs as well, because that would take them out of the hands of gangsters. Something like 90% of all acquisitive crime in this country is related to drugs being illegal in some way. If hard drugs were prescribed by the NHS, for instance, like they used to be right the way up until the 1960s, when we only had a few hundred heroin addicts in the country, now we have probably hundreds of thousands. If we prescribed it in the same way that we did in the past, you wouldn't get new people becoming hooked, because there wouldn't be an incentive to sell any in order to make money to pay for your own drugs, which is the reason why you keep ending up with new people getting hooked on drugs, I think, is because the people that are addicted end up having to sell some. Either they end up having to sell some, or they end up having to get involved in burglaries and property crime. I think you could get rid of probably about 90% of all burglaries, home break-ins and thefts if you just legalised hard drugs. And as far as the softer drugs are concerned, again, I think they should just be sold in coffee shops like they are in Amsterdam. And I think the statistics show that when that happens, there isn't an increase in people smoking cannabis. And in actual fact, there might be more of a resistance to it, because it will then be seen as something that the government wants people to do, and then people would naturally want to rebel against that, and the rebels would be the ones that didn't take the cannabis, rather than at the time when I was a teenager, when the rebels were the ones that did take cannabis. If it was sold in shops, then it would no longer be seen as a rebellious thing. I think overall, legalizing drugs would it would leave us in a much better situation than we are in now. So I don't disagree with the Greens on that subject either. I disagree with the Greens on their crazy environmental ideas. I disagree with them on their ideas of immigration. And again, I think if you actually talked to the people that support the Green Party, if you were to say to them about the problems that immigration causes, and more people means more resources end up needing to be used, more concreting over the green areas, I think they would probably realise that they should also be anti-immigration. I mean, this is just the people that support the Green Party, I'm suggesting, rather than the people at the top. I mean, the environmentalist movement was actually started by nationalists. The Soil Association and the organic farming, that all comes from nationalists in the 30s and the 40s. So it's not as if it's completely against ideas that we have as nationalists. I mean, we often say, well, it boils down to blood and soil. Well, environmentalism is the soil part. Anyway, moving on from the election topics, we also have some interesting news that's going on with the Labour Party. Recently, Keir Starmer tried to take on Gordon Brown once again for a position, and Gordon Brown is the one that stopped the investigations of the grooming gangs. He effectively said to the police, when they said that they wanted to investigate it, he said, oh, we've made a decision that these 12-year-old child prostitutes have consented to doing this. They've effectively, they want to be in this position, and that's why it was not investigated. But there's something even worse than that Keir Starmer has done. I can imagine you're saying, well, what could be any worse than preventing the investigation of grooming gangs? Well, how about hiring a former advocate for pedophiles' rights as your new advisor on women and girls? And this comes from the Daily Telegraph. Headline is Harman, wrong choice after row over pro-pedophile group. And Harriet Harman, I believe she's called the grandmother of the house or the mother of the house because she's served in Parliament for so long. Sir Keir Starmer's decision to hire Baroness Harman as his new advisor on violence against women and girls has drawn criticism over her work for a rights group linked to pedophile campaigners. And this is massive at the moment on X. Lots of people are pointing this out. In fact, there's a community note where it says that Keir Starmer has hired Baroness Harman. There's a community note pointing out the fact that she advocated for the pedophile information exchange in the 70s. And that now she's been asked for advice on women and girls. These are the sort of people that make up the Labour Party. Sir Keir announced the former Labour deputy leader's appointment on Saturday morning. The decision came amidst growing calls for his resignation after he led his party to its worst local election results on Thursday. However, Lord Kempwell, the Conservative peer, questioned whether Lady Harman was the right choice to be in charge of tackling violence against women and girls. Lord Kempsell, rather, not Lord Kempwell, the former political director of the Conservative Party, wrote on X, "Sorry, Sir Keir, I don't think this person should be in charge of combating violence against women and girls." The National Council for Civil Liberties, for whom she worked as a legal officer from 1978 to 1982, granted affiliate status to the Pedophile Information Exchange in 1975. So they knew that this pedophile information exchange, it wasn't just somebody that supported their work. they granted them affiliate status. So they were an official associate of the National Council for Civil Liberties. Lady Harman has previously acknowledged regret that the Civil Liberties group had links to pro-pedophile campaigners. I bet she regrets it, but she must have known that this was the case. In 2014, she said, "I very much regret that this vile organisation, Pedophile Information Exchange, ever existed and that it ever had anything to do with the NCCL, but it did not affect my work at the NNCL." Well, the fact that it might have affected your work isn't really the concern, is it, Miss Harman? The concern is that you were advocating for pedophiles. Defending herself, she added, "They, the PIE, had been pushed to the margins before I actually went to NCCL, and to allege that I was involved in collusion with pedophilia or apologising for pedophilia is quite wrong and is a smear." Well, you were involved in a collusion to do that because you were working for this organisation, and it was well known that this organisation was an affiliate to the PIE. I mean, they were an official affiliate of the organisation. When she became a member of it and worked for them, there's no evidence to show that she tried to push this organisation away or that she complained about them being an affiliate. I mean, you had a lot of push and protests for gay rights, effectively, in the 70s, and the Pedophile Information Exchange were involved in that. They were a part of the gay rights movement. I think even Peter Tatchell is recorded as speaking positively about them. I believe they said that if there's no evidence that a child was actually physically harmed, pedophilia should be okay. And I think she might have said words to that effect as well. There's something like, there's no evidence to show that you're not actually harmed by pedophilia. In fact, I've got the exact quote here. I just looked it up. This is Harriet Harman. "Childhood sexual experiences willingly engaged in with an adult result in no identifiable damage." And that's a direct quote from her. So we have her saying that, she regrets that this organisation, pedophile organisation, was involved, but they were an affiliate of the organisation. And she's quoted as repeating the sort of things that they would say, the sort of things saying that children are not actually harmed by being sexually abused. I think it's quite horrendous that this woman has been put into such an important position. In a statement announcing her new position, Sir Keir said, "Harriet is a strong advocate for women and girls, and I know she will deliver greater opportunity for women in public life." Well, how is that a good advocate for girls to be promoting an organisation that wants to see pedophilia legalised? And she's been put in this place as an advisor on girls. He said, "I am committed to tackling structural misogyny that is a barrier for too many women and girls. I look forward to working with Harriet to drive forward action on this important issue." Tackling structural misogyny. Well, what about the misogyny that results in the rape of young white girls by predominantly Muslim grooming gangs? What about that? Does that not count as misogyny? Does that not count as actual pedophilia, abuse, sexual abuse of underage girls? The sort of thing that his advisor was making excuses for in the 70s? Earlier on Saturday, J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, also criticised the appointment, pointing to comments the Labour grandee made in 2022 when she said trans women were women. So not only is she not suitable for giving advice on young girls, she's also not suitable for giving advice on women either, because she's saying that men are actually women. Miss Rowling suggested Lady Harman was a poor choice for the role, saying that you cannot defend what you are afraid to define. Reacting to the appointment on X, Miss Rowling said, "Bravo, Keir Starmer, for getting in an advisor on women and girls who think the definition of women and girls includes men and boys." And also, don't forget that her definition of pedophilia doesn't appear to include young children that have been sexually abused but don't actually show any physical harm from the experience. J.K. Rowling continues, that'll definitely win back people who believe Labour's a party for smug, lanyard-wearing, luxury belief-espousing cultural elitists. The author quoted a comment Lady Harman gave during an interview with Sky News in 2022 in which she said, as far as I am concerned, women are women who are born women, but women are also women who are trans women. So men, basically, that claim to be women, that dress up like a woman and think that that then actually makes them into a woman. I mean, clearly that's delusional, but that is the situation that we have. And that is the sort of thing that's being promoted by our leaders. Ms. Rowling has been a vocal campaigner on women's rights and has previously criticised the Labour government's stance on transgender issues. She supported the group For Women Scotland, which won a landmark ruling from the Supreme Court last year that transgender women are not legally women. I mean, what a state of affairs to get into where we need to have a Supreme Court ruling to tell us the difference between men and women. That interpretation of the ruling has been contested by some politicians within Labour, particularly around access to women-only spaces. And it seems that there are still organisations in Britain which are still not creating separate sex toilets, for instance, between men and women, or changing spaces. There appears to be corporate organisations that are just refusing to accept this ruling that says that biological men should not be allowed into single-sex spaces meant for women. Lady Harman said after the ruling that it meant that single-sex spaces could exclude trans women, but only where necessary. Well, no, the ruling says that they need to exclude trans women full stop, not only where necessary. So here is an instance of the Supreme Court, which was put in place by Tony Blair's Labour government, making a ruling on this. And then you have politicians that don't seem to understand the ruling. She was accused by some commentators of misunderstanding the verdict with the remark. Political opponents also criticised the appointment of Lady Harman after she was brought into Downing Street alongside Gordon Brown, who has been made the Prime Minister's new special envoy on global finance. And again, that's another interesting appointment, isn't it? Nick Timothy, the Shadow Justice Secretary, said Gordon Brown sold the gold and caused a debt crisis. Harriet Harman doesn't know what a woman is. Starmer is so bad, but this is nuts even for him. And Gordon Brown, effectively, when the gold price was at the lowest price that it has ever been, he sold all the gold reserves at the lowest price that it's ever been. And then we had a global crash, basically, after that. We had a huge debt crisis. And Keir Starmer seems to think that that qualifies him to be a new advisor on global finance, the man that sold all the gold at the lowest record low prices. A Tory spokesman added, his record on political appointees is as disastrous as his record on the economy, energy and defence. What about his record in appointments then? I say this just follows after David Lord Mandelson, doesn't it? I mean, he appoints the homosexual that's linked to the paedophile Epstein as his American secretary. And now we have somebody that advocates for paedophilia and doesn't know what a woman is as advisor for women and girls. And we have the man that sold all the gold at the lowest prices ever, all the country's gold, for that matter, as the advisor on the global economy. You really don't think that he could make any worse appointments than this, really. Saturday's announcement came as Sir Keir faced demands to resign from 30 Labour MPs and only lukewarm backing from some key cabinet ministers. And again, you have to look at this. Why are there demands that he resign? Well, there are demands that he resign because he put Lord Mandelson into that position, because he appointed Lord Mandelson as the Foreign Secretary to America. And he doesn't appear to have learned from that, does he? If he's going to put Harriet Harman in as advisor on women and Gordon Brown as advisor on the economy. I'm surprised he doesn't bring Lord Mandelson back as advisor on underage boys. Talking about boys, there's also a trial taking place last week And it was a trial of Ukrainian rent boys that apparently petrol bombed Keir Starmer's house and Keir Starmer's car. And this is interesting because it wasn't the house that he lived in and it wasn't the car that he lived in. It was his previous car that he sold to his sister. And there's a D notice on this. So the reporters are not allowed to report on what is actually being said in the trial. What we have learned is that the jury have been told that they are not to consider the actual motive for why these Ukrainian rent boys were petrol bombing Sir Keir Starmer's car. All they are allowed to deliberate on is, did they conspire together to do this? So there's something very, very fishy about this. The fact that nobody's allowed to report on it is obviously something that they wish to keep secret there. And again, and it involves rent boys, something that you would imagine Lord Mandelson might know something about, going to these sex parties at Epstein's. Perhaps Keir Starmer was procuring these rent boys for David Mandelson and then didn't pay them. Perhaps it's something like that. Will we ever find out, I wonder? The twin appointments will be seen as an attempt to unite the warring factions of the party. It came after Sir Keir voted not to walk away from number 10 and said he would not tack Labour more to the right or the left in response to the electoral threat posed by Reform and the Green Party. Well, he didn't just vow not to walk away from number 10. He forced all the Labour politicians to vote against there being an independent investigation into his appointment of Mandelson. So he didn't just say he's not going to walk away. He literally prevented there from being an actual investigation into the reasons why he's being asked to walk away. Mr. Brown, who was Prime Minister from 2007 to 2010, is a more left-wing voice, while Lady Harman is seen as a Labour centrist. But the move prompted criticism among Labour MPs, who questioned how bringing back figures from nearly 30 years ago could be an answer to the party's current problem. One normally loyal minister told the BBC the announcement was a joke, adding there is no question to which bringing these two back is the answer. But it does remind me somewhat of Rishi Sunak, who brought back David Cameron, who's now Lord Cameron. He brought back David Cameron, and I think he made him into the Foreign Secretary. So we see the same thing here. We see Keir Starmer hearkening back to Labour governments of old in order to bring in people from back then who, let's face it, had a dodgy record all the way back then. If you look at Harriet Harman, I mean, this was in the 70s that this organisation was promoting paedophilia. It's not as if we don't know about Gordon Brown selling all the gold off. He did do that. Nigel Farage, whose Reform Party was the main winner in Thursday's local elections, taking more than 1,400 seats in England and becoming the second largest party in Wales, said the return of Mr. Brown showed that Labour was doomed. Well, I'm not so sure they're doomed. I think they're going to stay in office. The problem is Keir Starmer going to stay in office? And the real problem with that is if he gets removed from office, who do they have to replace him? Will we have Angela Rayner? Or will we have David Lammy? I think David Lammy would be quite interesting as a Prime Minister. He'd be quite entertaining, I think. But so would also Rayner. I think she would be quite entertaining as well. So lots of exciting things happening on the political front. It's been a while since we had a conversation about politics and politicians. And as I say, we also have Mark Collette's insight into the election that was held last Thursday. We have that on straight after this, if you're listening to this on the live stream. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.